Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Only at True North stores. New True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Why should Bulls fans believe that you're the person who's going to steer this franchise back to prominence? And what is your plan to do so?
3.5 years ago, we put a group together and that didn't work. Right now, we're taking a step back a little bit and got younger. But we in complete control of our draft picks and looking forward to what we can do the rest of the season. And we'll go to the draft and free agency, try to improve our team.
That was Arturis Karnišovas, who we know is not speaking next week after the NBA draft, or at least the first round. That is going to be Mark Eversley, the Bulls general manager. We go live now to the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. This is Rahimi and Harris on The Score. And we are joined by the man, the myth, the legend, the human wrecking ball himself. It is Joe Calley, the Suntime Bulls reporter and the host of the Bulls Recap podcast. Joe, how are you?
What's up, kids?
I think the last time we talked to you, we had the idea to call you after Tibbs got let go by the Knicks. And the blowtorch that you took to everything, I think there's still smoldering remains after what happened that week. So we're pretty excited to have you on.
Well, I can say this. It's not my story to exactly tell, but the scumminess that went on this past year behind closed doors with the Knicks, they should all be ashamed and they'll all get what they have coming because the way it's playing out. I mean, if you want to be a scumbag and you want to be a cockroach and just survive in this league, you'll eventually be exposed. And I think there's going to be a lot of people at the Garden that are going to be exposed the next couple of years. All those good feelings that have been built the last couple of years with New York and then the Knicks and the fan base and the electricity that was going on the last couple of years just evaporated because scumbags are scumbags, and we're all going to see it play out. That's what I'm looking forward to.
It is a story as old as time, a story not quite that old, but is getting older with each passing day, Joe, is the story of the Chicago Bulls front office and the maybe lack of accountability, or maybe it's just the lowered expectations of what passes for a good product because the building is filled. What can you tell us about what's going on with the front office in Chicago and whether or not they are indeed getting extensions all the way around?
Well, I think the extensions for the suits is done. And I don't think it was over this last week. I'm 99.9% sure from the people I've talked to that Arturis has been done for a while. And that goes without saying. I mean, I think he has the trust of the Reinsdorfs, whether it's fair or unfair in the eyes of the fan base, whether they feel like he warranted that or deserved it. He has a great selling point to extend him and to go ahead and have that done. For the simple fact of the, you know, the book's clear after this upcoming season, and they'll have a lot of flexibility, financial flexibility, and who knows what still opens up with this offseason and moves that are floating around and rumors out there. So it's safe to say Arturas has been done for months and was probably done either near the end of the season or just when the season ended. And then it's just a matter of the order of things. When you're the executive, you make sure that you have your general manager and then he still wants to do the job. So Mark Eversley was done, and now it's Billy Donovan's turn. And they don't really consider themselves the days of Gar Packs and then the coach and that pecking order being very clear have kind of died down. I will say this. The one thing that if you're a coach for the Bulls right now, the big change between what it was under Gar Packs is it's a democracy. And you get the freedom to say what you want and the freedom to hear things when you want to hear them and have a say in it. So Billy Donovan's in a great position. I think he loves the relationship he has with the front office. And so it was just the order of things that kind of play out. They weren't going to extend Billy and not have have a lame duck front office. That just doesn't work. So Billy Donovan's just kind of the final piece of this puzzle.
And also, Joe, of course, we're referring to the report from Drew Stevens, who had the tweet yesterday saying, on the heels of the reports that the Bulls and Billy Donovan have begun contract negotiations, Arturas Karnišovas and Mark Eversley have already had their deals extended. He said a source told It's the Bigs Media, on Tuesday. So that was the tweet we saw come down last night. And that's the thing, is we knew that there had been some clandestine element when it came to the extensions that were originally discussed regarding Billy Donovan the last time this happened. Joe, you talked about it a lot, just how we didn't know. I understand that at least we're getting some information now, but how do you compare and contrast when this happened the last time, where there were extensions that we didn't know about until much later?
Well, I mean, it's important to clear up that, like I said, Arturas was done for a while. So this isn't like the front office just had theirs done and now it's Billy's turn. That's not the way this is playing out. And the New York thing had nothing to do with it. They approached Billy with the contract extension right after the season and basically told him, look, this is going to get done. And Billy was not concerned about it. It wasn't like, oh, crap, the Knicks have come a-knocking, so we got to make sure we have our guy and extend him. That's not the way it's played out. And it seems like for anyone that has that misconception, you can go ahead and erase that. I mean, this is not a big surprise. What will be a surprise if do they officially announce Billy Donovan, or do they stay in secrecy? You know, Jerry Reinsdorf's take has always been, it's my business, what I do at my front office, and none of your business. And that's fine. But I think the coaching thing is bizarre, because if you're proud of your coach and you're proud of the job he's done, go ahead and announce that and let that fan base know. It almost is like they did this with the White Sox too. It's almost they in shame it gets leaked that the coach or the manager was extended. And it's almost like they're trying to hide it. So I hope they take a different approach when it's official with Billy Donovan. But yeah, the front office has been done for a while. Talks with Billy started right after the season. He knew this is how it was going to play out. And the New York rumblings have nothing to do with any of this.
Joe Cowley, Sun-Times Bulls reporter, host of the Bulls Recap Podcast, on with us here on Raheem and Harrison. Joe, you break up a good point about the way that they kind of announce or don't announce those things. I'll say this. When the Cubs signed Jed Hoyer, they should parade that man around town if things are going the way they're going right now. I can understand why the Bulls / White Sox aren't exactly heralding anything. There's not much to herald as far as the on-the-field, on-the-court product if you have expectations as a city and as a fan base. I will ask you this, because it's the thing that's percolating for me personally. They cannot, I think it would be borderline criminal, sign Josh Giddey without that man signing an offer sheet somewhere, unless it is at a rate that is amenable to them. Do you see that happening?
I could see them out of good faith go ahead and just offering him a contract, because I think they have a pretty good feel of what he's going to be offered, which I think is different from the Patrick Williams thing, where they really just took a flyer and just said, this is what we're offering. You can bid against themselves before it hit the market. The Josh Giddey thing, the way it's played out, the only thing I would say is there's only one team that really has the money, and he, because of his age, fits the wave of player that they have right now, and that's Brooklyn. So maybe you do want to bring Brooklyn to the card table and see their cards. But at the same time, the going rate for what he did the second half of the season is $30 million a year. Do you want to test his ire, play that game of chicken with him and say, well, we're going to let the market bid for you, and then if there's no bid or if there's a weak bid, then we'll go ahead and match it. And then you have a distrust that Zach LaVine never got over. Zach LaVine never had a trust for the old regime and how they did things, and he didn't have a lot of trust for this new regime when he finally left. So do you want to have that kind of culture, or don't you? And so, but early in the year, I would have said it was malpractice if they did that. But I think Josh Giddey showed enough where they have a pretty good feel that $30 million is going to be the market value for him.
30 seems like a lot, Joe. I'm just saying 30 for as far as being a shrewd business person and knowing how the second apron works and everything else.
Everyone in that draft class where he was picked from, that's the going rate. Suggs, all of those guys. So, I mean, that's just where that slots. I mean, that's the business of basketball at this point.
I also think, Joe, that when we're asking the question, and Marshall brought up the second apron, because I think we're seeing these new cap realities and the new tax realities play out real time. You know, that's partially why the Thunder and the Pacers are in the finals, for example. And I understand that part of it, but it does make you wonder how much financial flexibility this next season the Bulls are going to have at all. Like, say they do want to move somebody. They might have to help pay some of the salary if it's Vooch, for example. You know, how do you see that playing out if this is the money that's being dedicated to Giddey?
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily they're going to have to pay some of the salary. If the package is right, whether it's a Kuminga thing and it's a sign and trade with his contract and Vooch is part of the package, Coby White, you know, we just saw what Bane got. Coby White is nowhere the defensive player that Bane is, but he's a hell of a scorer. And when you have teams in the East now seeing a hole, okay, Indiana, do they feel this thing could be duplicated next year? Boston is going to be without their best player in Jason Tatum for likely all of last season or next season. Cleveland, okay, great regular season team. But and New York, you know, like I said, the dysfunction in New York. The East is kind of opening up where teams can get aggressive, and we already saw Orlando do that. So, you know, it's actually by sitting there and putting his hands behind his head and doing absolutely nothing except be mediocre, Arturis Karnosoros has had a great offseason by everything that's happened around him, and he's done absolutely nothing. It's just the landscape that he's operating in right now. So there may be a market for Vooch, and there may be a market for Coby White. And we'll see how that plays out the next 6 weeks or so, because I think this NBA offseason is about to get really, really crazy. I'd be shocked if a lot of crazy things don't start happening.
I love the idea that the chaos can be something that by standing pat, Arturis Karnišovas benefits from, because I'm wondering how are they going to get the assets to be in position to get a guy when they actually need a guy. And if you think there's a possibility that something can work with this Nikola Vucevic, Jonathan Kuminga thing, I'm interested to hear about it, because I'm highly interested in pairing Kuminga with the other players you have, and that's whether Coby White leaves or goes.
Well, yeah, Vooch was on the radar for Golden State last year.
Right.
That's a fact. We've all reported that. Casey Johnson, myself. I mean, that, you know, we know enough about what Mike Dunleavy was looking at to know that, yes, Vooch was serious radar. So, and they still have a problem there. They still need, you know, that punch and that outside shooting and playmaking from a five would fit really nicely there. So, you know, who knows? It's going to be, like I said, it's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be a crazy, crazy offseason in the NBA.
We are talking to Sun-Times Bulls reporter Joe Calley, the host of the Bulls Recap podcast. This segment is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. I do want to ask you about that Desmond Bane trade, because you know how I feel about the Luka one and the assets that were involved. At least there were four first-round picks that came with the acquisition of Bane. And also, going back to what you said about just the wildness that could happen when free agency officially begins in the NBA... Yeah, do you think that's a precursor of just what it takes for a team to value somebody, and what it might take to get the deal done when there are financial issues that may come with some of these contracts?
Yeah, and I think it also shows on the other side of it that NBA teams like Memphis are starting to understand that you can really only link yourself to two guys, and then it's going to come down to role players or young guys stepping up. Or if you're Oklahoma City, just a year after year of draft picks and more talent coming your way to the point where you're going to have to start trading some of those draft picks, although you don't have to trade them to the Bulls because they don't ask for them in trades. So, yeah, it's an interesting time because team building is a little bit different now. I'm not 100% agreeing with Arturas that you build the team out. I still think you need that it guy. And I think that's been on display, especially by OKC, who, you know, on some nights has two it guys. But I think that the other side of Orlando trade is Memphis showing, hey, you can really only afford two of these dudes. And then it's about building the right roster around it, building it out to a certain point, but also making sure that the two dudes you have are lock and step and really work well together. And so... I think that's the other side of it. There, it comes with a heavy cost. I mean, I think the NBA was preparing for the first and second apron, but I don't think the reality of it slapped them in the face until the February trade deadline that just passed. And now you're seeing teams start to get a feel of the waves and understand what this thing should look like. And it just so happens that I think OKC has been ahead of the game. I think Golden State's been ahead of the game, understanding what they wanted to do and preparing for this. I'm anxious to see how it kind of plays out.
The OKC Indiana Pacers, to have those two teams in the finals in this moment, how much has that kind of advanced that idea for everyone understanding the second apron and what the future ramifications will be?
Well, I definitely think there's some of that involved, but, you know, I also look at, you know, they've been the best two teams since January. And so, you know, I mean, Indiana overcame a lot of injuries early on and guys, you know, finding their way and finding their role. OKC, I think, wire to wire, has been one of the best teams. But what's being lost in this, yeah, they play with pace and, you know, they do some different things. And both of them, shoot threes and play the way that they want to play. But at the end of the day, since January, both of them have been really good defensively. And that's where I think Arturas has kind of lost his way, understanding that there is another side to this. And look, obviously, Modest, you know, the reports from their workouts in L.A. a couple of weeks ago was Modest is sick. Modest is a freaking headache in waiting for the rest of the league. That remains to be seen, but he added the muscle, and now he's playing behind that muscle already. So, that's good news because I think he could be probably the face of their team and a two-way player, and then we'll see what they do with this upcoming draft. But you need to – there's different components to this, and the idea that you could just build a team out, have depth, play with pace, and boom, you're right there. Arturas is fooling himself. You need to be able to stop these dudes and stop these high-paced teams and make life difficult for them. You just can't run with them. And as the playoffs showed, those two teams came out, but the playoffs were all about 80s – rough house basketball physicality, and the Bulls are nowhere close to that. So Arturas still has a lot to do with this roster if he thinks he's close.
Oh, yeah. In fact, if you hated the way the regular season looked, yeah, I feel like the finals and the playoffs were actually for you, you know, like that demographic.
Right, right.
I also want to ask you this, Joe, because we hadn't talked to you since Aaron Rodgers is officially now a Steeler.
Didn't I tell you everybody to relax? I said relax.
You did.
I think Aaron Rodgers wanted the theater, Joe. I don't necessarily think it was everybody else.
No, there was an agreement in place. It was just go ahead, finish your business, and come back and be ready to grab number seven. I mean, that's what this is about. It's about his legacy and the legacy of the standard. So You know, it's hard to explain all of this to Chicago football fans.
Wow.
I mean, they're just kind of, I hope we got the right coach and quarterback. I hope we got a quarterback that could throw for 4,000 yards. I mean, it's like kindergarten finger painting. So to have to explain, like, fine art to them is just difficult.
I will be talking to Joe about this after the Steelers go 9-8. And until the meantime, Joe, I know your birthday's tomorrow. Happy birthday.
It's actually today.
Oh, happy birthday. Happy birthday.
I'm sorry I got bad intel on that. Happy birthday, Joe.
I appreciate it. And much like Aaron Rodgers, I'm celebrating my birthday dinner tonight, and then I'm going into it's either going to be 72 or I might go for the 100-hour water starvation so I could go into my own darkness retreat.
Oh,
so
my goodness.
Starting that tonight.
You already covered the Bulls. You don't need to do all that.
I've been in darkness for a while. I got you. That makes sense.
Wait a second. You decided to join us on your birthday?
We appreciate you.
Yeah, it's just another day. I got to paint a bedroom. I got a grill to build. Is it really my birthday or is it just kind of a day?
It's whatever you want it to be, Joe. We'll go with that.
There you go.
Happy birthday to Joe Cowley. Always great to talk to him. Joe Cowley, the Sun-Times Bulls reporter and the host of the Bulls Recap Podcast. We keep the guests going here on 670 The Score.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. You know that music. We are excited to welcome in Brett Bielema. He's the head coach for the Fighting Illini. And big day tonight. You're going to be at the Cubs game. You're going to be you're going to be in great voice, as they say.
I'm looking forward. I'm actually doing a duet with our quarterback, Luke Allmeyer. This is my fifth singing of the seventh inning stretch, I thought I needed to throw some changes up. So my quarterback, Luke Altmyer, is going to sing with me.
Can he sing?
I don't know. Yeah. And I was a little nervous. I called him on Sunday. I said, hey, we got clearance from the Cubs to do a duet if you're interested. And he goes, what do you mean? I said, well, this is kind of what it is. I sent him Harry Carey, Eddie Vedder duet. I said, this is kind of where I'm thinking. So I don't know if it's going to be any good, but we'll try.
Let's start with him because I think he was a big reason you won 10 games. Also, there was some – we wondered if he would come back.
Right. Yeah.
Was it hard to bring him back? And how important is he to this season?
You know, first and foremost, he's a good player, but he's an incredible good person. Mom and dad raised a good kid. His dad is actually a team doctor for Mississippi State, so he's kind of been around college football. He understands it. Obviously transferred from Ole Miss, so he's kind of been through that process one time. I know people contacted him. I'm sure if you really follow it. Actually, after spring ball was done, there's a team that really came after him hard. But I think he knows where we've taken him, but more importantly, where we can go. When I sat down and talked with him, I think it was awesome. You know, he literally asked me three things. He asked me about the coaches were going to be around him. He wanted to make sure that my offense coordinator, Barry Lunney, and Art Sikowski were going to be there, the two guys that coach him the most. He wanted to know about our wide receivers. We lost a good receiver to the Denver Broncos lost some other guys, and he wanted to know about the production that we had coming back. And the third thing, the most important thing to him was just, you know, how we were going to take on this season ahead of us. We got some high expectations. Some people are saying a lot of good things. So I think he knew where we were going to go, and that probably kept him here better than anything.
Any surprise at how well things went? I mean, you exceeded expectations a year ago. Any surprise to you?
You know, I would say the part that was awesome for me was really driven through Luke Altmyer. Just the way we played at the end of half and end of games. We were really good in critical moments. I mean, you guys saw it last year in your level here, right? Like sometimes if people don't have a plan in those critical moments, the games are decided in those critical moments. End of half, end of game. Red zone scenarios, how to use timeouts, how to put yourself in a position. I think for me, going to my 17th year as a head coach, I'm actually amazed a lot of times that the way people that are put in the positions that we're in, they really don't know what they're doing, right? And then the players look silly, right? And then it compounds, and our guys really handle those moments very well, and that's going to be a big part of our success.
Got to be honest, didn't see you winning 10 games last year. that was a big surprise, and you guys did surprise people. You had that kind of success. You come in this year. You're right about the expectations.
Yeah.
Now you know how it is. You've done it before. You set the bar here, and then it's meeting those expectations that can be tough. It's handling success that can be difficult. Why are you guys equipped to handle success?
You know, I think we all learn from our past failures, right? Like we learn from things that we didn't do well. And this past year, I kind of had a moment in the locker room after a loss to Penn State. I thought Penn State was a really good football team. Obviously, they went on and won a couple games in the playoffs. So we went to that game, and we were literally a first and goal on the 2-yard line. Had a couple mishandled moments, and we ended up losing that game. But I was in that locker room after the game, and I said to myself, listen, I thought coming into this game we had a really good football team, and I know now leaving we really do. And that's kind of what I think kind of helped define us. You know, went on to win some games down the stretch here. I was really worried about the game here in Wrigley. Northwestern's kind of a feisty team. We're playing in Wrigley Stadium, a baseball stadium that we weren't really accustomed to. We won that game pretty convincingly. And then I really thought going into the South Carolina game, that was one of the better teams in college football. They were probably on the cusp of college football playoffs. I thought we were as well. To play that game the way we did and win it the way we did, I knew coming out of it that we had done a good job, and really excited. We got 18 of 22 starters back from that team. And anytime you return your starting quarterback, and then also people underscore this part, right? Like the center, Josh Kreutz, him and Luke have been together every step of the way. And anytime you have that connection between the guy that's snapping the ball to our quarterback and, you know, as you guys know, the family that he comes from, like his mental football cue and awareness, Josh Kreutz at the line of scrimmage is like having another coach on the field.
Yeah, Olin, we lucky enough to talk to him all the time.
Oh, gosh.
And he is so excellent in terms of understanding the game. I just wonder, your recruiting has also reached a different level. You've also stepped up getting a lot more national attention.
Yeah.
This is the thing that amazes me watching college football anymore. It is an unending difficulty. You've got to go out. You've got to bring people in. You've got to work the NIL, work the transfer portal. And like keeping guys is as tough as getting guys anymore. Yeah. But you've done a great job.
Yeah, we have actually led the conference in retention. You know, I'm not oblivious that probably our top 10 to 15 players that came back from last year's bowl team in 10-win season, those guys all could have left me, right? Like, they definitely could have probably gotten paid more than we were paying them and put themselves. But I think they know in our building, they know what exists, right? Like, I always, you know, tell our players and our coaches, like, you build relationships every day. How you say hello and goodbye in the hallway is just as important as how much you teach them on the field, right? Like, you build relationships every day. I think the other part that's really kind of crazy is now this new settlement that came in 2 weeks ago, this is going to really level the playing field, right? Yeah. So, you know, we still have a little imbalance this year. We're going to play teams that probably have a $30 or $40 million roster. But next year, moving forward, everybody should be in that $13 to $15, $16 million range. And I said this about a month ago. I get a lot of feedback on this. I said, I don't give a crap where we shop. If it's Louis Vuitton or Walmart, as long as we're all in the same store, I'm good, right? Like, let's just all kind of be in the same thing. Like, I really don't care where I shop, right? Like, my wife sends me on a grocery list, I'll go to the grocery store. Just send me to a place that everybody else is at. Because right now, it hasn't been that way. Last year, we finished fifth in the Big Ten. You know, the four teams ahead of us, we were at 5 million. At least three of the four teams ahead of us were north of 20, 25 million. And you could do that once in a while, but you can't sustain that.
And I think, though, as much as things have changed and as much as things will continue to change, what hasn't changed, and I think what you do a great job in your program is the recruiting is still the people business. It's still about the relationships you mentioned. So let's go back to retaining a player. I think the story, as the story goes, and this is probably a couple months I remember reading this, so help me with the details. J.C. Davis, you show up at his house unannounced. It's Christmas season. They're watching a movie, and it's like, who's here? Oh, it's Coach Bielema. Is that California?
So I was privy to a little bit of information that they were going to pass this rule that allowed players that had played in JUCO to have one more year of eligibility. J.C. came out during COVID. He was a 260-pound high school lineman, went to a JUCO, went to New Mexico, and then we recruited him out of there. Had his draft grade, came back as a fourth or fifth rounder, and I knew what was coming, so I got permission from our AD. We got a plane. I grabbed three of my coaches, and we flew on Christmas. At first, I had to get permission from the wife. You guys know where I'm going, right? Like, say, hey, do you mind if I skip Christmas Eve? And we flew on a plane and landed, and then, you know, presented it to JC, presented what we talked about, and the thing that was awesome for him, he came in as a, you know, 290, 295-pound kid. We had turned him into a draftable player, and I said, hey, man, we're about halfway where I think we can take you. And it's been awesome. And to your point, I literally tonight I'm going to sing the seventh inning stretch. We have an event from 5 to 7, but at 7:15 I'm hopping on a call to a recruit that I have scheduled with his parents, and I sure as heck hope I'm getting good news, not bad news, right? Like, it just never ends. And it's awesome. It's a big part of what I really enjoy. There's never been a greater time to be a head coach in college football than right now. It's just, it's really very NFL-driven. You know, I have a player personnel department that's set up just like the NFL. I've set my coaching staff up just like the NFL. I've managed in our roster size last year and the way we distributed our money. They put it into a little, basically an analysis. And the way we structured our salary structure last year for our team was almost identical to the Detroit Lions. And that was a team that, you know, I see all the time. They build their foundation up front, you know, I know we don't want to hear that here, right, in Chicagoland. But
they had a pretty good offensive coordinator right here.
That's right. I didn't even think about that. But, yeah, like it's something that we pay attention to, I think. We don't have a lot of egos. Super excited. I know you guys will be gone, but we have three or four of our guys coming in here this afternoon. We have a media day set up for Gabe Backus, Luke Altmaier. Josh Geske is a very good starter, three-year starter at offensive line. Josh Kreutz is going to be in, so we gave our linemen a media day as well, and that's kind of fun stuff.
I'm curious, what was your take on the playoff and the difference from college football last year than previous seasons?
I think it was just awesome.
Awesome.
It just, to know that you're a team, you know, we were, you know, I can get a little Twitter rampage once in a while, right? And I was trying to, you know, just bring attention. Hey, we were a nine-win football team. We had lost to Penn State and Oregon, who were in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And had a game that was right down to the wire, lost to Minnesota. But there were SEC teams that were saying, hey, we should be in. But I think now, you know, 12 teams, like, you have a chance to really, you know, be a three loss team, but still talk about the playoffs. And now if we go to 16, which I think would be even better, Now you got teams, you know, that are playing in October, November that are really striving to still make the playoffs. And I think that just – there has never been a time where college football has been as popular as it is now. And I think a lot of it is driven off the college football playoffs to go from 4 to 12. And I think we'll be knocking on the door of 16 here shortly.
We talked about retention, which is so important to your program, especially this season. But you also have to mine the transfer portal aggressively. And you have to be open to other guys. And you have to keep a good – have that constant awareness of people in the portal. How is your team different now because of the way you did that?
It's a great question. We've normally carried around, since I've been a head coach, 120 players, 85 scholarship, 35 non-scholarship. Now we're going to drop down to this 105-man roster. They're letting you grandfather some players in, but really this 100-man roster is similar to, you know, basically NFL rosters in the out-of-season carry 95 players.
Yeah.
So we're really managing an NFL roster. And I told you before that we went on, right? We sold one from Ball State. We have a tight end, Christian Abney, that I literally watched his film, and I'm like, okay, he's in the portal. We got to acquire this guy. We were a little thin at the tight end room. We also have another tight end that we got, Stoffel, who came from South Dakota State. So we have 21 high school players coming in, and we have about 20 transfer portal players coming in. So that's 40 players.
You also went to Wisconsin, right?
We got one now, James Thompson, who I tell you, I think we might have taken the best player from Wisconsin and the best player from West Virginia. We have 18 players coming back that were starters, and now you start taking the best players from other teams. That's when things can happen, right? And I'm really excited. You know, there's not one tackle turnover or touchdown from last year that carries into this year, but really excited about where this team is and where they can go.
Well, and I mean, these are big-name guys that you're talking about. It's got to be difficult to kind of – I mean, it mustn't be that difficult because you're doing it, but you've got to guarantee them a certain amount of playing time. You got to have a plan pretty much for everybody, that whether you're retaining them or going and getting them.
Yeah, we do two things in Illinois. It's a little different. We don't do multi-year contracts, and we don't do incentive-based contracts. Some teams do that. So, you know, I want every player that comes in the room, even Luke Altmyer, who's a returning two-year starter at quarterback, I want him to know that the guy behind him wants his job just as bad as anybody. And that's truly building like an NFL emphasis, right? But, yeah, we deal with roster sizes now. We do with salaries. We do with contracts. You know, it's kind of interesting. You know, you'll sit down and tell a kid last year that was making, you know, 50 grand, and you're like, hey, I'm going to pay you 250. He's like, oh, thanks, coach. Like they have no idea, right, what it means to make $100,000, right? Like, it's insanity at its best. But the best is they're also very humble. We have, I'm telling you, like, I'm very truly blessed. Every day I walk in that building, we got kids that want to be hungry. They recruit for us. We had some great recruiting weekends here the last couple of weeks. We're getting a big time. I think on Thursday we're going to get some really good news. So it's at a level now that we just got to, you know, I talked to Josh Whitman, our AD, when I first took the job about building something that's sustainable, right? And Josh, you know, gave me an opportunity to sign a new contract that I think created a lot of good feeling with our recruits and their parents. And it's just at a different level right now that that I'm really excited and hopefully can make this thing happen year after year.
So Luke Altmyer comes back to Illinois, obviously, because he's got aspirations. He could be part of the college football playoff as a team. Individually, I'm sure he came back for some similar reasons because his ceiling is pretty high. You've coached a lot of good quarterbacks. What is he capable of if he reaches his potential this year?
You know, he kind of is a combo platter for me. He's very creative, right? So one of the things I learned with Russell Wilson when we had him at Wisconsin, Russ was really good when the answer wasn't right, right? Like as a coordinator, they always try to design things and hey, when he does this, this guy does this, we're going to do this. But Russ was at his best when it was at its worst. And actually, Luke has improvised and made some moments. There was a play against Rutgers at the end of year last year where he had a rusher in his face and he just went from a straight over normal trajectory to a sidearm and threw a strike that scored a touchdown. He's really, really good at that. He kind of reminds me, I have a kid named Brandon Allen who's been in the league, I think, 8 or 9 years now. He's kind of got his posture stance and his intelligence. Kid that I recruited, Scott Tolzien, who is a friend kid here in Chicago, who's now the quarterback coach of New Orleans Saints. He's very Scotty was always very structured in his approach to the game, and Luke has those same qualities. So he's kind of a combo player, but he's really good because there's really good players around him. And then this isn't not to be overlooked. You know, I have all three of my play callers, my offensive, defensive, and special teams coordinator. This is going into our third season together, collectively together, and to have that continuity with the coaching staff is a really big deal.
How do you feel about the role of general manager at the college level? We see like examples at Cal this week. It just became out. I think Justin Wilcox is going to report directly to Ron Rivera, who's going back and he's a GM of the Cal program. That's an emerging role. It's a changing role because of all the things you talked about, the salary cap and the contracts. And how important is that role for programs?
Well, it's about having everybody on the same page. So first off, our AD, Josh Whitman, played at Illinois, four-time letter winner, two-time academic All-American. Those things don't just happen, right? Played in the NFL for 5 years, and now he's our AD. So he has structured our football building in a way that allows us to be successful. My GM, Pat Hamilton, has been here 10 years at Illinois. He was here before I got here. Lovey had him. And so he kind of learned the NFL model through Lovey, and I was able to retain him and keep promoting him. And then I have a chief of staff, Mark Torresani. So us four, and there's another guy, Roger Denny, who's big in the athletic department, we kind of work as a team to kind of combine the money avenue. You know, I told Josh when I took the job, listen, I'm not going to look for shiny shoes or new helmets or new uniforms, but I want my players to get three things. I want them to be supported, right, by the people that they need to be around. So academics, equipment room, training room, coaching staff. I want the people to be there to support them. I want to supply them, right? So we took our budget that was their fueling, which is food and hydration, which was $800,000 when I got there. Now we're about $3.2 million a year, right? So we're fueling and supplying them. And the third thing, the biggest thing, is protect them, right? So we have customized helmets. We have the best gear that they're in that college football can buy. But I'm telling you, what goes on in some of these other schools, like it's a shit show some places. Like, I don't know what's going on at Cal, right, or all those other places, but like there's places in schools that are saying things and doing things that legally can't happen, but they're still saying it because there's no accountability. So this new world order that we're going into, that's kind of bringing the NCAA in combo with this new structure, is really awesome, because these buffoons that have been clowning around, paying guys silly money and doing, there's accountability that's coming, right? Like, it's really fun, I think, for as a coach to know what you've been doing and the way it's going to get rewarded, and watching some of these things happen around you, it's going to be really cool.
And you know that you're in the conference you want to be in. You know that the conference is spectacular. Now, that's, you know, the downside is you're going to have really tough games against a lot of good teams. But, man, it's good to be king.
You know what? It's truly – we're the only conference in the country. Tony Petitti, our conference commissioner, has absolutely been a brainstorm, just a really blessing for us. You know, we literally have the only conference in this country. You know, I know the SEC talks a lot and, you know, Twitter's a lot and all that jazz. But like, bottom line, we're in all four time zones, right? We're from on the East Coast with Penn State, Rutgers, and Maryland to the West Coast with those four schools out there, USC, UCLA, Washington, and obviously Oregon, right? Like, those are brand name schools that are coast to coast. And then you got us in the middle with, Ohio State, you know, in Michigan. And like, there's no other conference that can talk about being in four time zones. In the NFL, like, if you're a kid from Florida, right, and you leave Florida and you play at Illinois, you are literally telling 32 teams you can play anywhere in the country. You know, you're a school in the South, you're a kid from Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, and you stay in the SEC, you're never leaving the South, right? Like, everything is down there. Never prove to the Packers or to the Bears, to the Patriots, to the Giants, to the Jets, that you can play in cold weather. So we use that stuff, and I'm telling you, like, the tide has shifted the last two or three years to the Big Ten Conference, and that other conference that you know has a lot of conference chatter. They know what's happening, right? And you know, the NIL world now is kind of a legalized and a way to do things that is pretty awesome. And I think that's got everybody on point, and that's why this conference is probably at a premium right now that they've never seen.
Did you make up with Shane Beamer?
Oh yeah, yeah. I called Shane.
You good with that?
Yeah, it was a little moment. Awesome. We got a little caught up in
it was entertaining, Brett.
It was great.
Definitely entertaining. I
was probably
it was not premeditated, I promise. I tell you, it's everywhere I go, especially in recruiting, you know, I'll come in, and the best was my wife and I, we got away for a little 3-day weekend in Nashville, and we came in the hotel the night before, and there's about five or six guys that were checking in. I knew they knew who I was, right? But they didn't say anything. My wife and I kind of we went to dinner that night, came back in, and I saw him again. I'm like, okay, these guys know. So the next morning, got up early, 6 o'clock, and my wife has a code phrase. She says, that sounds like a great idea. So that means I should get up, go downstairs and get a coffee and bring it to my wife, right? So it was about 6:30 in the morning, and I come through the lobby, and all six guys hit the tee bar, and they were waiting to play golf, and I just started laughing. I wasn't expecting that to come out.
So
but
funny.
They came up to me, and they were actually all Georgia fans, so they kind of enjoyed the moment for themselves.
Good stuff. That's awesome. Coach, well, thank you. Thanks absolutely. For coming in. I know you're going to have fun tonight.
Yeah.
And keep up the great work.
And we'll be talking to you this season.
Appreciate it, gentlemen. Absolutely. Very much. ILF.
Thanks, Coach.
That is I-N-I. Yeah, absolutely. Mully and Haw.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Jed's in charge. I'm going on a bender.
Jed Hoyer.
Jed Hoyer, man, what a story that is.
Chicago Cubs president of baseball operations.
You got to get better. And then we should try to be building 90-win teams here. I mean, you know, like that's like what you have to do to, you know, that's playoff standard.
World Series champion general manager.
The key to this whole operation is going to be building that scouting and player development machine. The Cubs way.
A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series.
Jed Hoyer.
Should we count my no comments on this question? See how many we get to in 6 months.
Jed Hoyer with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Jed Hoyer is sponsored by the all-new Toyota on Edens in Northbrook. Visit toyotaonedens.com. It's our pleasure to bring in the president of baseball operations of the Chicago Cubs, Jed Hoyer, here on The Score. Jed, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Things have been going really well for your team, even when they haven't had slug. How satisfying is that to see that your team is so well-rounded?
Yeah, no, it's been a good run for us. And, you know, obviously early in the season, we were scoring, you know, a ton of runs. And, you know, I think we have a really good offense, but some of those numbers were probably unsustainable. And you have to be able to win in a lot of different ways. And I feel like the last couple homestands, the wind has blown in a little bit against the Rockies, against the Pirates. And, you know, we've been able to win some games, you know, in different ways with pitching and defense. And that is gratifying because you're right. You can't just win one way. You have to be able to win a lot of ways. And we've sort of done both.
talking to Ryan Brazier in the clubhouse the other day. Guy was on the 2018 Red Sox and last year's Dodgers, who both won titles. He said he has not been on a team that fields it and runs the bases as well as this one. That's high praise.
No, it is. And it really is a credit to the coaches and the players. But our coaches are super well prepared. I think they're, you know, really taking advantage of little things the defense does. I thought like our double steal in the 10th inning was this really great preparation by the coaching staff the other day. And so we've been running the bases hard. And I think you need to on the days that the wind blows in, you have to be aggressive. And we've been more aggressive on those kind of days than on days we can slug. So that's great to hear. It is a really good defensive team. Obviously the guys up the middle have just been fantastic, and having that, you know, defensive spine, so to speak, has really allowed us to play a lot of clean games.
Now that Craig is a year and a half in with the whole operation and kind of knowing how things work, what would you say has been his strength? And can you, as someone that's in charge of the baseball ops, see it more clearly now this season than maybe last season?
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly more comfortable. You know, we changed the staff a little bit based on some of his recommendations. So I think it's the staff is more reflective of what he wants. I think that if you look at the way we're playing this year in terms of how we're running the bases and how we're playing defense, I think it's more reflective of what he wants. And so, yeah, I think certainly having him here for a full year, getting him a chance to see what we do and then and make some real recommendations has really been helpful. So, yeah, he's certainly more comfortable, and I think, and as a result, you know, more effective. And I'd say, in terms of his biggest strength, I mean, obviously he's incredibly bright, and I think he makes great decisions in game, and he's really well prepared. But I think his steadiness is really remarkable. It's hard to tell after games we won or lost, just based on his reaction. He knows that, you know, this is a 162 game marathon. You have to, you know, be steady. And I think I can't imagine anyone more steady than him from on a day-to-day basis.
Has he affected the way that you think about managing a bullpen from a roster perspective during the course of the year, now that you guys are working together on that?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is I feel total confidence that if we bring someone in, he's going to deploy them the right way. And he's willing to throw guys right in the fire, which I think is important, that he trusts the guys down there. I think you've seen almost every guy in our bullpen pitch in a significant spot. You know, I remember when we acquired Drew Pomeranz, it was, you know, a small deal with Seattle, and, you know, he threw him kind of right in high leverage situations. And I think that the players feel that trust, that he'll put him in big spots. And I think it means a lot for us that, you know, if we acquire somebody, you know, based on, you know, he's part of the process. He knows what the scouts say. He knows what the analytics are. And so he understands the player, and he's willing to deploy those guys in the right spot right away.
Boy, that's interesting, because that makes all the sense in the world. A guy who's done the job and is a part of that, because the roster churn and the role churn in the bullpen has seemed very aggressive and well done this year. Since April 19th, it's the best bullpen ERA in baseball. It's kind of amazing considering how it started.
Yeah, I mean, it is stabilized really well. And listen, bullpens, they're volatile. You know, there's ups and there's downs, but it's been an impressive run for these guys. They've been throwing strikes. They've been attacking guys. And, you know, hopefully we can continue to give those reinforcements, because I always say there's just sort of there's no completion. There's no finish line when it comes to a bullpen, that there's always going to be, you know, injuries, is always going to be volatility, and it's our job to try to keep finding guys. And, you know, the nice thing is, like I said, knowing that when we do find those guys, like, he'll be part of the process, and then he'll also deploy them the right way. I think that goes a long way towards having an effective bullpen.
Yeah, speak on a couple of guys specifically in the bullpen. What was you guys' plan to get Ryan Pressly right? Because what he's done since being taken out of some of the high leverage situations has been impressive enough to end up back in the high leverage situations.
Yeah. Well, I'll give, you know, Tommy Hotovy and the pitching guys a lot of credit. You know, when he struggled against the Giants in that game, I feel like in some ways that was, I don't want to say coming, but it was something that it was led to by the fact that he was striking out at that point. I think it was like 7 or 8% of the batters he was facing, which is just too low to pitch late in the game. The ball was in play too much, and whenever the ball's in play that much, there's, you know, a lot of balls end up being hits. And so I feel like, you know, he wasn't striking out guys before that game. That game happened. I think, you know, give Ryan a lot of credit and our pitching guys credit. They sort of redoubled their efforts to figure out, you know, how to incorporate more swing and miss and get back closer to his career norms. And I think since that game, it's around 23% strikeout rate. So he's really improved significantly since then. And you're right. I think he's, give him credit for, you know, pitching well and earning his way back to pitching high leverage. He pitched three in a row the other day, all in big spots, and did a nice job. So he deserves a lot of credit for sticking with it and making real improvements.
We have been discussing as a show, Spiegs and I have been talking about Daniel Palencia, and he's four-seamer slider primarily. And we've both been like, is there a tertiary pitch? And should that pitch be a changeup because of how good his four-seamer is? Or should it be like a splitty to go with it? When you see someone with that type of arm talent and he's being effective with two pitches, do you push for a third pitch, or do you let him come to you with the idea of a third pitch?
Yeah, he does have a split that he doesn't throw very often. I think, you know, he was a starting pitcher, you know, so he has the ability to throw, you know, different pitches. But ultimately, I think simplifying his attack plan has been the best way to sort of get him in the strike zone and get him consistent. And I think that's the most important thing. You know, he's throwing, you know, north of 100. He's throwing strikes. And I think sometimes that simple approach is enough, honestly. So, yes, I think obviously you want to continue to refine, continue to improve. It would be great if he could get to a point of comfort where he would throw the splitter in some of those situations. But right now, I think the biggest focus is on, he's throwing 100 and he's in the strike zone. We're going to be okay. And I think that's been the focus. And I think Daniel and the pitching guys have done a really good job of getting him there.
It's quite an origin story to how he became a Cub. And then now here he is closing games. It's kind of an example of how bullpens work in modern baseball, isn't it? It's a remarkable route for Palencia.
Oh, absolutely. And I give our pro scouts, our analysts a lot of credit. I mean, he was a guy we got, you know, for Andrew Chafin at the deadline, and it was kind of an unheralded move. And, you know, he went to the minors and was a starter. And it is, you know, in some ways, it's how it happens, right? The, you know, guy with this kind of arm talent probably wasn't quite consistent enough in some ways to be a starter, but you put him in a bullpen, and there were some ups and downs, but he stuck with it really well. Our guys have stuck with him, and it's fun to watch him have success right now.
It is. It's fun to see the success team-wide of what you guys have done, and we're getting close to the halfway mark. Do you feel like you know what this team's identity is?
I think the identity of this team, I think, is I think we play really clean baseball, and we have really good at bats. And I think that's the most important thing, right? I think we're fourth in the league and lowest walk rate as a pitching staff. I think the ball, we don't have a huge swing and miss staff. We generally throw strikes. The ball's in play. Our guys, we have really good defenders. And I think we run the bases hard, and I think, you know, the at bat quality has been good. So I'm mostly impressed with the consistency of the group in terms of showing up prepared to play night after night. You know, you're going to have your ups and downs, but it's not going to be because of preparation. They're going to come trying to play a clean game that night defensively and trying to have good at bats. I think we've done that remarkably well. And I think that does start with Craig.
We are talking to Jed Hoyer right here on the Spiegel and Holmes Show on The Score. Are you upset with your former employee and friend, well, I don't know if he's a former friend, Craig Breslow, for making the Giants better in the National League playoff race? Because, boy, they seem to be kind of a beast now with that Devers kid.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think, you know, I know Brez incredibly well. I know Buster a little bit. I think both guys are really competitive. I think both guys feel like they made their organization better with that move. And I think both things can be completely true. But yeah, certainly the National League, this continues to get more and more depth and more good players. And that's just what we have to contend with. But I do think that, you know, like I said, right, I know Brez felt, you know, incredible conviction that was the right move to make them better. I think, you know, he's really competitive. He wants to win. I think he feels like this is the best avenue to that. And I think that makes a lot of sense for them to do that.
He had some really thoughtful humility yesterday on the record about learning from the Devers situation on the personal level about like how to communicate with players and that kind of thing. I bet you could relate on a human level to that stuff.
It's hard. You know, I think that, you know, obviously he hasn't been there for a long time. I feel like one of the advantages I think of being in a place for a long time is, you know, you not only could we acquire these players, we've watched a lot of these players develop and grow up. And so you build those relationships, and those are easier when you're here for a long time. When you just get to a place and people are established, I think that's a little bit harder to do. So, I think Brez is pretty incredible executive and incredible mind, and he's going to be really good at this job for a long time. But it's good to hear that, you know, he's still learning. And I think that, you know, this was a very complicated situation in a lot of ways and not an easy one to deal with.
So what are the chances that they end up better, kind of like the Nomar trade in 2004, Jet?
Well, I think that was the calculus, obviously. You know, I think whether that happens all in 2025 or in the future, I mean, they've got a really good young core of players. I feel like that there's definitely an organization with the arrow up. And I think that was the calculus for them is that, you know, obviously I think they feel like they can still compete this year, but I think, you know, obviously they felt like they can redeploy that money and that position really well going forward. And like I said, they've got a ton of young talent. So I think that they're a definitely an organization that's in a really healthy place.
It worked for you and Theo in 04 is all I'm saying, you know? So why not?
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, that was, I give Theo all the credit in the world. I mean, that was such an unbelievably unpopular decision. And they have told the story a lot of times. I remember, you know, I think I was pretty naive. We just felt like it was the right baseball decision. Our defense was terrible and we needed to improve our defense. And I, you know, in my, my naivete, that's sort of how I viewed it. And you know, we made the trade and then, you know, all of a sudden like the ramifications of you just traded away this iconic player in Boston and, you know, Theo had to wear that. And I remember watching him go through it and seeing just how lonely it was to wear it. You know, during that period, and it took us like 2 weeks to really to start to play well. The first 2 weeks of August, we still kind of muddled around, and then finally in mid-August, we took off and never looked back. But it was the right decision. And frankly, I've said this a number of times that, you know, that deal today would be like, yeah, of course you did that because our defense was really poor, and we needed to improve our defense. And but back then with defensive numbers being like really rudimentary, people didn't view it that way at all. And so it's funny to look at it through the lens of now, which that deal is pretty logical. But back then it was really radical and no one wanted to hear about how you just improve the defense.
Well, Jed, what's that anxiety like for an executive when you make a move and you're like, look, we need this move maybe to work out for us right now versus down the road? When those types of situations comes up, how much antacid are you taking?
I mean, I've said this a lot. I think that the deals that I've made that I had the most conviction on, like, I think that, you know, ultimately, like, you know, the trading the core in 2021, I mean, it was brutally hard. And I was obviously here when we won the World Series. I know how much those players meant to the organization. I also felt incredible conviction that we needed to move forward. And we needed to, you know, acquire some young talent for the organization. So, you know, I had the conviction to do it, but it didn't mean that the backlash wasn't difficult. There's a lot of really difficult days after those trades. And that's something that's the job, right? You have to make these hard decisions. And I think Brez felt really convicted that he had to make this decision. And like I said, I give him a ton of credit. I mean, I look at it the same way when I look at like Nico Harrison with the Mavericks. You know, whether or not he made the right or wrong decision, that's not for me to argue. But having the strength to make the decision and believe in it, I think that to me is really impressive because you know you're going to face a tremendous backlash. And ultimately, like I know he believed he was doing the right thing for the Mavericks, and I think that takes a lot of strength.
To go back to specifically the Devers deal, you guys had to do something, I guess, similar, not the same, where with Seiya, you had to say, look, we're getting Kyle Tucker, and we probably need you to play a little bit more DH than you'd like to. How difficult was that conversation, and how happy are you that it's worked out seemingly for everybody?
Yeah, well, Matt, you know, I think that helps knowing the player. Like, you know, we brought Saya in. We had Craig and I got on the phone with him. You know, we had Zooms with him in Japan to talk about it and to make it clear. And I think that because we had the relationship, I think that was something that we were able to do. And I think it's worked out really well. And he is playing. I think we're trying to get Kyle and Ian off their feet and give Saya days in the outfield. And he's done a great job with it, and he's having a great year. But I do think we benefited from having the relationship, but we were very straightforward and very transparent about the situation. And I think Saya handled it really well.
Do you think a deal like the Devers one could jumpstart the market? What does it feel like in terms of the time frame of the trade market for this season now?
Probably a one-off deal. I don't think it jumpstarts the market, but I think, you know, there's, as you start to get into this time of year, there's more conversations that are happening, and it just sort of keeps ramping up. And usually there's a lot of talk around the draft. People in this industry generally talk around the draft anyway, so that there's always a lot of chatter around draft time. And then really right after, I mean, it's almost like as the draft ends, I feel like that really kicks into gear, and that's sort of how it's worked the last few years.
You guys made the Samardzija and Hamill for Addison Russell trade on the 4th of July, made the Jose Quintana acquisition on the 13th of July. So you've got some experience with early moves. Does this team and this situation warrant you thinking on the earlier side?
Yeah, I know if deals are there and transactions are there, I think certainly you're right. I mean, every turn through the rotation or every outing that you get extra out of a player adds value. So it makes a lot of sense. And, you know, when we were on the sell side, we were very aware of that. You mentioned a few of those deals. I think that the deal that we traded Matt Garza like 2 or 3 weeks before the deadline as well. We were pretty aware of that. And we felt like we could always get a little bit extra value out of teams if we were willing to act early. And sometimes, you know, some of the sellers haven't declared themselves. So if you're a seller it was clear that we were sellers, it made sense to kind of jump the market rather than wait for the market to get flooded as we got closer to the deadline. So we were pretty aware of that as a seller. And, you know, I think as a buyer, certainly it makes sense that if the prices aren't, you know, prohibitive, it makes sense to make an earlier deal rather than a later deal.
If you talk to pretty much any baseball executive this time of year, they're going to say, we need more pitching. And they're not going to be wrong. Everyone needs pitching and could use a little bit more. And I know that you've gone on the record and talked about that too, that's something that you might be looking for inside of a trade market. That being said, the moves that you guys have already made, and considering that Justin Steele has been down and Shota has been down for a big portion of the season, when you look at the way that your rotation has reacted to this, does it change your mind at all? Or do you say, like, let's continue to bolster them?
I think they're separate things. Like, I'm super proud of the way this rotation has pitched. I mean, I think you're, you know, our two highest projected pitchers, you know, one's been out for the year, the other's been out since really like around May 4th. And they've responded really well. You know, Talion's been terrific and Boyd's been terrific. And, you know, Cade has come up and pitched well. And, you know, I think, you know, Ben's had been a little bit up and down, and Colin has been really steady. And I give those guys so much credit for that. But all that said, I just think that, you know, the way the game is played now, you've got to just continue to add pitching when you can. So yeah, there's a reason that all these teams are saying they need pitching, is because I think everyone has the sense that you can't have enough depth. And also the rules have changed, right? Where you can't make the waiver deals you used to be able to make in August. And so you're a little bit more shut once the deadline passes on July 31st, and that's your, like, those are your pitchers. You can't go out in the same way you used to be able to do that in August and find somebody. So, yeah, you have to acquire as much depth as you can, and I think we'll be certainly looking for that.
What's the latest on Shota?
He's going to pitch later this week for Iowa, and then we'll sort of reevaluate. But he's made two rehab starts for in Arizona. He threw four innings on the 14th. I think he threw 44 pitches and then threw a bunch in the bullpen. So No, he's on track, and like I said, he'll pitch for Iowa later this week, and then we'll kind of reevaluate.
Not that you guys would rush him, but does it help to not rush him because you guys have been so good?
We haven't rushed him. We want to make sure we get him right and get him healthy. And I'm excited to get him back. I think not only is he really good, but he also provides innings that are super valuable. And you know, in today's game, when you can get 6 or 7 innings out of your starter, it helps rest your bullpen. And so, you know, I think that's been something that I think our guys have done a better job of that lately. But you know, we had a stretch where our guys were kind of going 5 innings, and that makes it really hard to get 12 outs a night out of your bullpen. And, you know, we're excited to get Shota back, but, you know, we haven't rushed him. And ultimately, I think we'll be better for that.
All right, just be honest. Last thing, Jed, has anybody sent to you or have you seen Jim Bowden's ridiculous trade proposal from the Cubs for Sandy Alcantara of the Marlins? Have you seen this one yet today?
I don't read that stuff.
I did. It's not what I asked. Did anybody send it to you yet? Because
no.
Would you like to know? Would you like to know what Jim has proposed? All right, thank you. Here it comes. Right-handed pitcher Cade Horton, outfielder Owen Casey, outfielder Kevin Alcantara, and shortstop Ronnie Cruz. All 4 of those guys for Sandy Alcantara. What's he smoking?
I think the trade deadline is sort of like the NFL draft in the sense it almost becomes its own industry.
Yep.
You know, I know that a lot of people have opinions about what people should do. And listen, I think it's fun. I like the fact that people are always talking about the trade deadline, but ultimately I don't read that stuff for a reason.
All right. We have a canned answer that we've saved. Tanny, you have this, right? So we'll just say if the Marlins called and asked, here's what Jed would say.
No.
So that, yeah, that's just you saying no. We're just going to use that.
I love it. I love it.
Jed, tomorrow, my partner, Matt Spiegel, is singing the national anthem at the game.
God. Unbelievable.
Yep. Can't wait to hear the rest of this comment.
He literally is going to sing the national anthem tomorrow.
Singing the anthem tomorrow night at your place.
Is he gonna sing live? Is it pre-recorded? That's what I want to know.
No, it's live. It's live. Yeah, I got a guitar player. He's going to do his Jimi Hendrix thing, and I'll do my Whitney Houston thing, and we'll meet somewhere in the middle tomorrow night.
Oh man, I can't wait. I'm going to be out there for that.
Yes, you have to. Go down there and heckle them. Because that's what we love, is heckling the anthem.
Yeah, then you can call the radio station and critique me like I've critiqued you through the years.
I think that's your chance.
Yeah, I tell you what, it's funny. We always talk about that with the 7th inning stretch singers. It's like, oh, God, that was a bad one. And I'm like, who am I to criticize? I'd be terrible. So I feel like I'm going to – like the fact that you're willing to sing in front of 36 to 38,000 people, I give you all the credit in the world, and I will, you know, I will hold my critiques.
Well, we appreciated the fact that
I wouldn't do it. Let me tell you that.
So if they asked you, you wouldn't do it?
Do the anthem?
Yeah.
Oh God, I feel like I'd be like trampling on the flag if I sang that. That would be terrible. Yeah, I know. I think you have to know your strengths and weaknesses, and I would never do that.
All right. So wait, what about the stretch?
You do the stretch.
I do the stretch. I'd probably bring people with me, though, to make sure that, like, I was drowned out.
Yeah. I might make that deal for Alcantara. Yeah, you know?
Right.
You never know.
Yeah. Here's what I'm thinking, Speaks. Next year, 10th anniversary of the World Series team.
Jed doing
Jed,
a stretch.
Theo, Rizzo, whoever, goes up there and sings a stretch.
It's up to him.
Hey, it's not my department, but, yeah, certainly. I've never done it. It'd be a life experience, that's for sure. And like I said, I'm always wary when I criticize other people because you gotta know yourself. It can't be easy.
It cannot be. Jed, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Take care.
And Stephanie White is telling Caitlin Clark, get one, meaning get that rebound. There it is! A triple-double for Caitlin Clark! The third of her career, and she starts 2025 with a triple-double.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the score that obviously the first game of the year against the Sky, the Chicago Sky losing, getting blown out, and Caitlin Clark beginning what has been a very dominant season for her, although she did miss some time, and that did have a big impact on the WNBA. We are delighted to welcome in Christine Brennan, fine columnist from USA Today, and an excellent author as well, and she has a new book called On Her Game, Caitlin Clark and the Revolution in Women's Sports. And she joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Good morning, Christine. How are you?
I am great. David, Mike, great to be with you both in my adopted hometown, at least for 4.5 years at Northwestern. And of course, David, you and I go back a long way to that panel at Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah.
When we must have been like in kindergarten.
That must have been right. Like, yeah, back in South Bend.
Yeah.
I remember that right, well.
No, it's great to talk to you guys. I know you're obviously a huge hit in Chicagoland and with so many of my Northwestern pals and friends. So thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me on. Just a little bit to talk about today.
Huh? Oh, boy. I mean, we had a conversation earlier in the show just about, you know, I get it. Like, we've got officiating problems in every sport, but I cannot understand why you have such bad officiating going on in the WNBA to the point where, you know, I don't want Caitlin Clark to be overprotected, but I think you got to call basic fouls and some of this stuff when a player is thrown to the court. I don't understand how that's okay. I just have never seen that. This is like 90s Pistons stuff.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's important for a couple of reasons. One would be the financial health of the WNBA,
right,
as we know, and it rankles some people, but facts are facts, and numbers are numbers, and we're journalists, this is what we do. We don't get to make up the facts. And the fact is that when Caitlin Clark, as you alluded to, missed 5 games, the TV audience for the WNBA, basically more than half of that TV audience, not just for the Fever, the entire league, disappeared. More than half of the TV audience decided we're not watching, whether it's Fever, whether it's Liberty, whether it's Sky, gone. It's never happened. I covered Tiger the length of his career. How lucky was I to have that experience? That Tiger, it would be a drop, but it wouldn't be over 50%. This woman is the economic engine of the league. We wish, obviously, that someone had been this 20 years ago, right? There were great players who got ignored. You covered them. You talked about them a little bit. I certainly covered them. But they never got the attention they deserved. We're here now. This is the one. We understand all the issues. Obviously, there's a racial component. None of us was born yesterday. We understand. And I get it. I totally get that. And I write about that in the book On Her Game, which, by the way, is coming out July 8th. But people can pre-order. the requisite plug from the author. Sorry. And but so that's it. So now what do we see? Twice now, Kennedy Carter, of course, back in June of last year, the cheap shot, not in the you know, run of play, you know, dead ball, the absolute hip check, which I write all about in the book. And then only a few feet away from that, by the way, guys, on that court, same court, is the Marina Mabry, you know, right, just freight train coming in and knocking her over. We understand run of play. We understand. I get the back and forth. I get J.C. Sheldon went to Ohio State. Caitlin Clark goes to Iowa. We get it. They have a history. I even get Sophie Cunningham mauling Sheldon. Again, not necessarily good. Certainly deserving of foul and whatever else they call flagrant, et cetera. But it was still in the run of play. It was a basketball play. Marina Mabry literally just takes out Caitlin Clark. You're right. She doesn't need to be protected, but we are talking about someone that is so far and away important to all of those players' future salaries, the CBA that's opened up, everything that they are working for is all encompassed in this woman. So don't treat her with kid gloves, but don't try to, you know, literally knock her out. And that's what we have now seen twice with both times the referees back in June of last year and now this year later, the referees literally blowing it and not kicking the player out right then and there, the way like 99% of America is saying, kick her out, and yet the referees don't see that.
It's really baffling. It is, but the controversy surrounding Caitlin Clark is illogical but undeniable. It's there with every conversation, every story, every interview, it seems. So, Christine, I ask you this. When you decided to write this book, whatever compelled you to do this, because it's a great topic, did you encounter more resistance or cooperation?
Certainly some cooperation from some great people. Kate Martin's voice is throughout the book. Lisa Bluter, the great Iowa coach, throughout the book. Many, many people, voices that are so important to all of us. Dr. Harry Edwards, the man who was the impetus for the Black Power Salute at the 68 Mexico City Olympics. Dr. Harry Edwards talking about the failings of the WNBA to prepare the players, 74% Black players, 74% Black league, to for the moment, which is understandable, right? You know, you've been toiling for years, getting no attention, and here comes a woman from Iowa who happens to be white, and she's getting all the attention. Harry Edwards, Brianna Scurry, the great goalkeeper of the 99 women's soccer team. I have her quotes, again, very powerful about how the rising tide lifts all boats. This is a tsunami. Take it and run with it, because it is true. They're all going to make more money because of her. Accept it. So it's not just me. You know, it's easy for me, a white woman from Toledo who got my undergrad and my master's at Northwestern, to talk about this. Let's hear from people who've lived it. Dr. Harry Edwards, as I said, Brianna Scurry, Tamika Catchings is throughout the book, and an incredible voice on these issues. So lots of people said yes, but the WNBA did not want to cooperate with in terms of after the fact, which I really tried after the season last year. Book goes Title IX, Iowa, If You Build It, She Will Come. Wonderful stories about Caitlin growing up and then into the Iowa years, and then, of course, the WNBA and everything that happened. I don't shy away from anything. It's a no holds barred journalistic look, unauthorized, because it had to be unauthorized. I'm not in business with Caitlin, even though she cooperated and answered probably 50 questions that I asked her, and is terrific. Just what you'd hope for. Just a wonderful person, and willing to, as I say, 22 going on 40 or 50. But yeah, like the WNBA was wary. Finally, Kathy Engelbert answered a couple of questions in March, right as I was finishing the book, crashing it to get it done. But Angel Reese, I tried, I think, three times. I've got that in the book, you know, definitely had several attempts to have her. I have a lot of quotes from her, but I wanted her to kind of sit back and analyze some of the Caitlin Angel stuff. No, would not do it. And I think, you know, that's a shame, because this book, you know, hopefully is going to be out there for a while. And I wanted to give an opportunity to people like Angel Reese to speak to me and to add context. So, you know, I think it's a mixed bag. I think the book covers everything. And again, those incredible voices, people who know Caitlin herself, Christy Sides, the coach last year, you relive the Indiana Fever season, which was compelling and fascinating, the Olympic snub, lots of breaking news, lots of new things that people don't know. That's all there. But yes, I certainly tried my hardest to get, you know, the players union, others to speak to me. They did not want to. And I think that's too bad. But again, that's totally their choice.
I got to tell you, the Olympics thing was like insane to me, going back over that and talking about the way that she has become such a better player over the course of one season. The idea that she didn't belong on that team. It's the same idea that somehow she doesn't belong on the league, and somehow the league shouldn't get these television ratings that they're getting, even though it's a benefit. It's crazy. Why not keep her on the Olympic team? I thought, I believe I read a story about you digging up some old tweets from Cheryl Reeve, the Minnesota Lynx coach, who is also was the Olympic coach, and she didn't pick the team, but she's out there complaining that the Indiana Fever is on television instead of the Minnesota Lynx. She's like jealous of the TV coverage somehow. I find that like so crazy insane. I don't even know how to stomach it. It's just crazy.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? It's actually sad because you guys know, and I've taken some heat for this. I have certainly done my best to cover and talk about women's sports issues when lots of other people couldn't care less, right? I have done that. I was on Lifetime TV doing sideline reporting on the WNBA in 1999. I was at the Atlanta Olympics when basically the genesis of the WNBA, and there was another pro league, the ABL at the time. I've covered this the length of the WNBA, off and on, issues on TV, mentioning them when everyone wanted to just talk about the NBA in the bubble. I talked about the WNBA. I talked about their advocacy a full month before Colin Kaepernick. So, you know, I'm all in, you know, on covering all that. And that, to me, that's why I did the book. That's why I cared about this story. We've never seen this kind of interest in the WNBA. I'm on the spot. You guys know this. I mean, my goodness, between all of us, we've certainly covered well over 100 years of sports, right? And, you know, the idea of a spotlight shining on Caitlin Clark then shows us players and gives opportunities for players most of the country hadn't paid attention to. Shame on us, right? Over the years, you missed it or whatever. But now you're seeing them. How that is not translating, it is mind-boggling. And as I said, it's sad. Because you would have hoped for more. But yeah, that actually kind of got resurrected by wonderful Adam Gold, one of your counterparts, the North Carolina radio host, where he brought it up again about Cheryl Reeve. But yes, that's all in the book. And I tried with Cheryl Reeve many times to speak to me about several times to talk while I was writing columns for USA Today and then also for the book. And she did not want to. And again, that's totally her right. But she's the coach of the team. She was not on the committee to select the team, but wink, wink, you know, she's the coach of the team. Yeah. How on earth is she tweeting about a 22-year-old woman, Caitlin Clark, you know, kind of going after her, picking at her, blaming her for some decision about what TV network was going to show what, which, of course, the TVs are going to show people that are going to get ratings, Caitlin Clark. And that was allowed by USA Basketball? That was okay, a woman who's still in the selection pool to be checked. That told us right then she wasn't going to make the team, and they picked 42-year-old Diana Taurasi as kind of a going-away gift. Just a horrible, worst Olympic decision, selection decision, team selection I have ever seen. And as you know, I've covered the game since 84 in L.A., and it's just bad. It was bad then. And I'm proud that I wrote that then, and it looks even worse every day that goes by. The global reach of this woman, the Hong Kong reporters the other day saying that they had come, and the way she reacted beautifully to tell thanks for coming. You know, again, just the wonderful gem of a person she is in the press conferences. What it would have been a one-person dream team, and USA Basketball left her at home. Absolutely stunning decision.
We're talking with Christine Brennan, the author of On Her Game, Caitlin Clark and the Revolution in Women's Sports, which you can pre-order now, coming out next month. So, Christine, I think historically speaking, I would go back to, maybe this is an exaggeration, maybe it's an apt comparison, but I think when Larry Bird and Magic Johnson came into the NBA, the popularity of the sport and the league was, I think, elevated because of those two singular individuals. I don't know that there's another comp in a professional sports league where one person is at the center or the forefront of so much popularity, especially if you measure it by television ratings, attendance, and things like that. Is that going too far, or is that probably what we're looking at here with Caitlin Clark and the WNBA?
Yeah, I don't think you're going too far at all. I mean, a comparison that I have in the book and talk about a little is Tiger Woods, that singular athlete that draws grandma and grandpa, you know, grandma on a Sunday afternoon during the Masters. You know, she probably wouldn't know, or grandpa, I mean, anyway, not sure that they ever watched golf in their lives. And they then scheduled their Sunday afternoons around Tiger's tea time. Right? Because they had to watch Tiger. I think everyone listening, I think you guys, we all know people who did that. Mm-hmm. They didn't care about golf. They wanted to watch Tiger. They wanted to be entertained. Caitlin Clark is a basketball player, yes, but she is an entertainer. Tiger definitely was an entertainer. And if he comes back, and hope he does, then he'll be the entertainer again, drawing the eyeballs, getting those great TV ratings. When you mention, you know, Bird and Magic, absolutely. I mean, people forget, but I remember this. You guys probably do, that the NBA Finals were on tape delay. You know, they can show them live. Right? I mean, come on. And then these two come in from the Midwest, you know, Michigan State, Indiana State, and boom. And on it goes with the NBA. The difference here, I think the big difference, is that the NBA has had high highs, right?
Yes.
I mean, the NBA had Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell, John Havlicek, George Mikan. I mean, there were a lot of great moments in the NBA. Golf, of course, had Arnie and Jack. So there had been a high level of interest in the sport, commercials, you know, companies wanting to advertise. You know, in golf, it's, you know, John Hancock's and Cadillacs of the world, Buicks, whatever, you know. So it's they had success. The WNBA, unfortunately, we've already talked about maybe, you know, people just ignoring it, not paying attention, whatever. Mainstream sports media, male-dominated mainstream sports media, not caring about it. I did radio shows where people would laugh about the WNBA and women's college basketball. They roll around on the floor. It's ridiculous. The WNBA had never had an Arnie Jack moment, had never had, you know, Havlicek, Celtics, Bill Russell, you know, moment, Lakers, Kareem moment. Well, so when we talk about these understandable connections, that's where it breaks down. Because when you're looking at the WNBA, the interest was so low. And then one person brings it up so high. And that's why, again, I wanted to focus on this story and look at the magnitude of this one person at this one time. We're almost at the 53rd anniversary of Title IX. I tie that all in. No mistake at all. The nation has fallen in love with what it has created. Everyone's got their daughter in the kitchen. You wave at the kid, the girl that's got a bag over her shoulder heading to soccer practice or lacrosse or volleyball. Well, Caitlin Clark is that girl all grown up. And others should have been too. Of course, Angel Reese absolutely deserves the attention. You know, she's incredible in terms of whether it's the rivalry with Caitlin or maybe it's not a rivalry, whatever. The interest is an influencer. Great. You know, that's great. More of that. But this never happened with the W before, where the others certainly had something before. And the one that just blows me away, the single biggest fact and on her game that I unearthed, and I was happy to be able to, with my researcher, Kathy Dunlap, who I know you talked to, college classmate of mine at Northwestern, she helped me out with all of this as well, that literally the average home attendance for the Indiana Fever in Caitlin's rookie year, last year, the average home attendance for Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever was better than the average home attendance of 5 NBA teams last year.
I cannot believe, guys,
I said that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And you know, I think, Christine, the bottom line on this, whether people like it or not, I understand competition and how you get worked up and all this, but when she was gone, the ratings halved. She comes back. She scored three pointers, 9 points in 38 seconds or something, and had a triple double. And we watched that, and you're just like, oh my God. And it ends up being the third most watched game in WNBA history. And you look at that and you think, it is to your benefit. Every player in that league, your CBA is going to be determined by all these ratings. If you don't like it, if you're jealous of her, get over it, because it's to your benefit. Don't poke her in the eye. Make sure she's playing. It's against your business interest to not have her performing.
It sure is. And this is the thing. Again, you and I, all three of us, are not saying, and I'm sure many people listening are not saying, don't touch her. No, Caitlin gives it out. One of the reasons people love her is because she gets feisty and fiery. I mean, that's fun for people to watch. Again, the entertainer as much as a basketball player. She's entertainment. She's the high wire act at the circus, chucking it from the parking lot and it goes in. I mean, even someone like Curtis Strange, the golfer, two-time U.S. Open champion, I talked to him and I quote, he's a chapter title. You can't take your eyes off her. That's a chapter title. And it's Curtis Strange. Quote, Curtis Strange, who, like, you know, he said, you don't leave the room when she's bringing the ball up the court. And you know, that's what this is. But we're not saying don't touch her, don't foul her, don't guard her. Of course not. What we're talking about is the Marina Mabry coming in like the L at 5 o'clock in the loop, right?
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
What is that? And how was that not ejected immediately? And how did Kathy Engelbert not say, you know what, yesterday, you know, we don't want any more of this for any player, much less Caitlin Clark. That's just common sense. The league seems paralyzed. I had lots of questions, not tough, necessarily all tough questions. You know, I'm agreeable. Let's talk on the record, off the record. Let's have a conversation. Nope. Finally, Kathy did. And a couple of things, and one thing was actually wrong that she sent me, because she couldn't even mention Caitlin Clark's name sometime. Or she's answering questions, she then immediately says Caitlin and then talks about Angel as if they're tied together. I mean,
strange.
Angel, right, guys? Angel can't sell out Wintrust without Caitlin.
No.
Right?
Nice.
Or without maybe the New York Liberty or something. So United Center, those tickets dropped to, what, $3?
Right.
Well, that's Chicago. If it's Angel, and again, I'm not ripping on Angel at all. I'm a realistic journalist, as you guys are, looking at the issues. And it's Caitlin Clark that's selling out the United Center, and then the prices are dropping when she's not playing. It's not the Sky or Angel Reese. I wish it were. I wish it were widespread. It's not yet. But in 5 to 10 years, it can be if you let this young 23-year-old thrive and not try to have her. Well, what if she gets injured again, right?
Yeah.
That's the question here. So it's fascinating.
Christine, thank you. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Christine.
Sure, guys. And real quick, I'll be at the bookstall on Thursday, July 24th in Winnetka, 6 o'clock. People can sign up. Sorry, I had to do that.
Yeah,
you
that's
guys,
great.
Right? I had to.
July 24th.
July 24th.
Yep.
At the bookstall in Winnetka, 6 p.m. Sign up and hope to see a ton of people. And thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. That is great stuff. That's Christine Brennan. We'll be right back. 312-644-6767. Mullion Hall on the Score.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
They're already stars, but now you can make them all stars. Vote in the 2025 Pro Spirit MLB All-Star Ballot 5 times daily. Show your favorite players just how much you want to see them play in Atlanta. And new this year, download and visit the MLB Pro Spirit game during Phase 1, and you can secure an additional vote per day for your favorite players. Submit your ballot today at MLB.com/vote and add some shine to summer. Voting ends June 26th at 12 p.m. Eastern Time. MLB trademarks used with permission.